It's Celtics coverage on clnsradio.com.
Sensational move from Kyrie Irving.
Oh, Hayward.
Horford lays it up and in.
Dial in right now and share your thoughts toll free, 347-215-7771.
Well, well, well. Hello, Celtics fans. It's your boy, Joe Choquette, with you tonight, driving the bus solo here on the Celtics Post Game Live, a CLNS media production. Tonight, the Boston Celtics were on a losing end yet again of a nationally televised broadcast brought to us by the good folks at TNT. Your final tonight in Toronto, the Raptors 118, the Boston Celtics 95. The men in green are tossing more gasoline on the fire that is the drama that has inevitably attached itself to this team as a whole, from the infighting to the selfish play to the inability to gel for 48 freaking minutes. And ultimately, what will define this season as a whole? It. The Celtics, by all accounts, seem to lack that killer instinct. They lack their quote-unquote championship pedigree to gain the line and make it to the finals. Time is running out on this Boston Celtics team, folks. Father Time knows no leprechauns, nor does he heed for a team searching for its identity. They've had the time. They had camp. They've had their full complement of players for long stretches this season, yet they still seem to step in every pile of crap that can be found. As a fan of this team, it's extremely frustrating. I can see the talent. I can see the potential. I can see some tryhards doing whatever they can to contribute. But what I don't see is the one thing that has eluded this team from the jump, and that's consistency. You know, it's funny to me. We all believe this team had what it took to compete with the Golden State Warriors. Maybe not win, but definitely compete. To take that step in their evolution. To show that they were the cream of the crop in the East. Well, what we've gotten have been a couple of feel-good stories, a ton of selfish basketball, a bunch of crybabies, and the drama, the mama drama, every single turn. Some of it's manufactured, some of it's true, but in the end, it's something they can't seem to deflect and find a way to quiet the noise. So what are the problems? Well, I'll give my opinions on that shortly. But first, let's take a look at this hot garbage game tonight. The Celtics look flat. The defense wasn't there. They were disengaged. When you have the announcers on a national broadcast talking about body language and showing dejection, that's not a good look. You know, if you can't bury a three, if you shoot horribly from the field, you can't expect much. And it's more of the same as of late. It's just hard basketball to watch. Whether you're a purist, whether you hearken from the days of, you know, I don't think anybody that listens to this is my age or older, but if you hearken from the mid-80s, you know, you can't watch this crap. If you've watched this team this season and you've seen the stretch now over the last three games, you have a heartbreaking loss to the Bucks, you choke it out to the Bulls, and then you just get throttled by the Raptors. This isn't watchable basketball. This isn't even fun basketball. I mean, don't get me wrong. If you're a Bucks fan, it's super fun to watch. If you're a Raptors fan, well, hell, you probably stopped watching sometime in the third. But if you're a Celtics fan, this was not watchable basketball. And there are some reasons behind it. And tonight, I fully intend to get into my thoughts on this team as a whole. More of a 30,000-foot view than trying to go possession by possession in this crap hole of a game. The second quarter defined this game. It was terrible, and it didn't get much better from there on. Anybody that went to that game that was a Celtics fan in Toronto should be demanding their money back. If you watched it on TV, you should lay a value on your time watching that game tonight and expect something in return. This was absolute trash. I'm not going to get talked off a ledge tonight, people. And here's the best part. Normally when I do these post games, I'm a co-host or I'm a host with a co-host. But tonight, folks, I'm driving the bus solo. There's no Nick Cecenzo to take me off my ledge. There's no Taylor McLeod to sugarcoat Kyrie Irving's play and how it's not his fault. There's no Bobby Manning to help me feel better about the team I'm watching. Hell, I don't even think my good friend Patrick Gilroy from WEEI is going to even take time to call into this show tonight because he's so angry we were texting during the game. So you've got me and my opinions, and that's okay because I make no excuses for them. They are mine. They are my observations. They are my opinions. In fact, if you don't like my opinions and you think I'm wrong or way off base, or hell, if you're even buying what I'm selling, I beg you, I beg you to call in tonight. Let's have a discussion. Let's get the toll-free number out there now. I want to get some calls coming in. The phone number is area code 347-215-7771. I'm going to give it to you again, and I ask that you please press 1 when you call in so I know you want to talk and not just listen. The number, 347-215-7771. I want to know where you stand on this team. I want you to hear some of my opinions, and then let's have some back and forth. Try to take me off the ledge tonight, because I don't think there's an opportunity for you to do it, quite honestly. If we're being honest with each other, and that's what radio is supposed to be, it's supposed to be your honest opinion, your feedback, if you're an analyst, if you're a color guy, if you're just a fan of the team, if you're a fan of NBA basketball, you have opinions. I want to hear them. Let's fire up this call line. Again, I'll give it one more time because I do want calls tonight. Area code 347-215-7771. Now, we've got the calls out of the way. You know what I thought about this game tonight. I'm willing to talk about this game should you want to do that when you call in. But more importantly, I want to dissect this starting five, player by player, where I think there are problems, where I think there are opportunities for improvement, and what I think is going to happen the rest of the way down the line here with our Boston Celtics. Ours, yours, mine, the NBA's. All right? That's where I want to go. I'm going to start breaking them down, then I'm going to go to break. When I come back, let's have the discussion. We'll take time to get to your points. And then do a little bit of back and forth, like two friends sitting at a bar talking it out, minus the drink. All right, let's do this. And show the appropriate level of respect for the players, I will start with none other than Kyrie Irving. First, let me say this off the top so it doesn't get lost in translation, because I'm going hard on him. Kyrie Irving is a generational, transcendent player. His abilities on the court and his multitude of accomplishments off the court typically put him in a place of godlike status for the team in which he plays fan base. So whether he's in Cleveland or whether he's here, the things he can do with the ball are unquestionably remarkable. His vision on the court to find the open player is legendary, and his uncanny angle shots will be in textbooks on basketball someday. That's the good stuff. Where I believe Kyrie struggles lies in his inability to have what I call the Brady effect. And maybe being a sports fan in New England, I'm spoiled and inappropriately compare players from different sports. But what is undeniable is the fact that Tom effing Brady, the GOAT, makes players around him better. I'll give you another example. Not too long ago, recent history, David Tease made the hitters in the lineup before him and after him better. Arguably, and please don't let lightning bolts come down when I utter these two words, Larry Bird arguably made the players around him better. And the list of Boston sports greats across all four majors who have played here and done just that goes on. But Kyrie doesn't have that in his bag of tricks. I've seen enough. And it shows. Kyrie would be awesome on a Golden State where he could be around players of similar stature and blend in. Do we know another player like that? Maybe somebody who left OKC and went to Golden State and is remarkably having a phenomenal season, phenomenal career. Kevin Durant did that. Kevin Durant's work in the confines of OKC needed to go to a super team, needed to help build a super team, and he's part of it. It's not the Kevin Durant show. It's not the Steph Curry show. It's not the Draymond Green show. It's not the he's one of five. Kyrie can't be the only one. It doesn't fit his skill set. The missing piece in his game is a tough one to comment on and a difficult one to call out. But in either case, it doesn't stop it from being true. You can have all the talent in the world, but if you can't figure out a way to get and keep other players who aren't on your level to play like they are, or find a way to work with them to get them beyond where they are as players, then you aren't winning championships as the focal piece of a team in the NBA. The list of current and former players in the NBA who undoubtedly make or made the players around them better and won championships is not as limited as one might think. In my very humble opinion, Kyrie needs to take a step in his evolution as a player and leader to get this team to where it needs to be. It's nice to have him take over a game. Sure is. Is it a sustainable model for a championship team? It sure isn't. Tonight, I'm going to pick apart the starting five and the bench. There's more of this to come, peeps. That's what we're doing tonight. But before I do that, and before I take my first call, because I see one lined up right now, area code 857, I'm coming right to you next. 757, I'll be coming to you next. I want to pay the bills. I got to thank the good folks at Boston Barber and Tattoo. Typically, we do the recorded lead first. I'm doing the live read. All right? Every neighborhood has a heartbeat, a place that represents the cultural epicenter of the area at its core. In Boston's historic North End, that place is Boston Barber and Tattoo Company. Boston Barber and Tattoo Company has become home to A-list Boston celebrities like Gordon Hayward, formerly Milan Lucic, Brad Marchand, and Aaron Baines. Boston Barber and Tattoo is more than just Boston's most well-known corner barbershop. It's also a tourist attraction for the hundreds of thousands of people that visit the North End throughout the year. Boston Barber and Tattoo, a North End landmark that represents the cultural epicenter of the area at its core. They're located at 113 Salem Street in the North End, Boston. I do suggest you check them out, whether you're going to get your lettuce chopped or you got a sweet, sick design you want stenciled on your body. Knock yourself out. Boston Barber and Tattoo Company's got you covered. They're the ones for you. So let's not waste any more time. I'm going to be on this thing for the next 47 minutes. Let's talk to you. Let's get somebody here, and let's bring them up right now. 857, you're on. What's up?
Hey, how's it going? Can you hear me?
I can hear you perfectly fine. Who do I got tonight?
All right, my name is Donnell. How you doing?
Good, Donnell. What's going on with you, my man? You heard me rant for a good solid 13 minutes.
Man, I don't even know where to start with this game. When you watch a team like Toronto and then you watch us on the same court, Toronto knows what they're doing when they have the ball. And us, I watch the game and I'm like, What are we doing on offense? Like, Toronto's running sets and getting the right guys the ball in their spots, and we're just going one-on-one every play, a different guy's taking his turn to try to post up. And it's like, is that what we're doing, Brad? Is that our team? I love Brad. I think he's a smart coach, but I'm starting to really question his ability to coach personalities in the NBA. I really am.
I cannot disagree with you on that point. I'm not just buddying up to you because you listened to me for 15 minutes before I put you on. But one of the points I'm getting to later in the show, and let's just do it now, why wait, is Brad Stevens.
Right.
You know, for the last 5 years, it's been Brad building the team, Brad with a new level of achievement year in and year out with win totals, with gelling on the court, with his plays out of timeouts. What have we seen? I don't want to wind it all the way back to the beginning of the year. Let's just take a snapshot, Darnell. Let's look at, the last 2 months.
Yeah.
Have you been seeing that dynamic play out of the timeout? I take you to the Milwaukee game two games ago. Final seconds, 3.5 on the clock. He has a garbage play to Kyrie in the lane, double coverage, no dish out. Three people wide open from three-point land, and Kyrie takes a junk shot, bad angle, against two trees. Not a good play. But I ask you this one question. I want your answer on this one because this is how we do it.
Yeah.
Why do you think Brad's taking a step back? What is the force that's causing this coach that we've seen 5 years in a row continue to grow, all of a sudden regress? That's what I'm curious about.
My answer, I guess, he does. I will give him this. He has a really, really tough situation to handle right now because I can't think of a team, with more talented dudes from top to bottom. I mean, yeah, there's like Golden State more top heavy than us, but we have from 1 to 8 are some really talented dudes, and it seems like we have two teams almost. It's like one team wants to play together in team basketball, and then you got Jaylen Brown and Rozier. They get on the court, and it's just like a street ball fest. And so I got to cut them a little bit of slack. It's an extremely tough situation, but at the end of the day, this is also what I think about Brad. A part of coaching professional sports is you have to be able to hurt a guy's feelings. And at this point, I think – one dude he needs to hurt is Terry Rozier. I would personally prefer to see more Wanamaker and less Rozier. We need one less guy who needs 15 shots on the court.
Darnell, you had me till then. I'll tell you what I think the biggest problem is with Brad Stevens this year. You were right. You were going right down the correct path. It's a spoiling of riches. He has too much talent, and he's never had this kind of talent to manage across minutes, across shots, across assignments, and across high-leverage shots. He's never had this kind of talent, and he's struggling to manage it, but there's one piece of that talent that he is, to your point, afraid to hurt feelings, and it's not Terry Rozier.
It's
the
Gordon
guy that
Hayward.
Runs the point for you. No. He hurt Gordon Hayward's feelings in the first month of the year after they had such a crap start. He took him right out of the starting five, and he rightfully did so because he was holding the team back. He
is
afraid to hurt the feelings of Kyrie Irving. Kyrie Irving is the issue right now, and I don't know why. I'm going to be honest with you. I love his game. The problem I see with Kyrie is the other four players on the court with him, for some reason, are just as big Kyrie Irving fans as Taylor McLeod, the other host here on CLNS Media. They love watching him play, but they don't play with him. They sit there and watch him play. It's so hard.
I feel like the only two guys.
Go ahead.
Keep going. I feel like
the
only
person that matches
plays with him. I feel like the only two guys who play with him are Marcus Morris and Al Horford. The other, whoever else is on the court, just.
Yep. I'm with you. It's absolutely true that when they play that two-man high pick and roll, Al and Kyrie, it's almost unstoppable. Problem is, you can't run that all game. But when they find it and they start running it on D and they start manufacturing, they hang with each other just perfect. And Marcus Morris, he's perfect to hang out there with Kyrie Irving too because he's just hanging out on a wing or he's hanging out behind the three line. He's not looking to do much damage. He's not trying to take shots away from Kyrie. He's actually a compliment to Kyrie's play. But Jason Tatum, Jaylen Brown, Terry Rozier, I'd say Marcus Smart plays well with them too. I'll throw that in there.
Yeah,
I think Marcus Smart plays okay with them. Yeah. So, okay. You talked me down a little bit. I'm still angry. I want to tell you I appreciate the call. I got a couple others I got to get to. But if you're going to keep listening in, I hope you do. I'm spitting fire tonight, my man.
Yeah, definitely. All right, man. Have a good one.
Thanks, dude. You too. Take care. All right, next we got 860. Who do I got here?
Hey, what's going on, buddy? It's Paul from Connecticut. How are you?
Good, Paul. You've heard me spitting fire for a half hour now. Where are you coming down on this?
just tuning in. I didn't even finish the game. I'll be honest with you. I was falling asleep.
Oh, you saved yourself some
quarter.
Pain.
Yeah, I still have it on. There's about 4 minutes left. It is a really ugly, ugly game. Tough schedule
Paul,
coming
just,
up.
Paul, just delete it on the DVR. It gets uglier.
Oh,
it stays ugly.
Gosh.
And it doesn't get any better. I'm glad you tuned in. I'm sorry you missed the beginning part because I literally have been on fire tonight. Literally, I don't even want to talk about this game because it's systemic of the larger issue, which is where this team is headed, where this team is now, and what's wrong with this team. That's the crux of my night tonight. Not to mention, this is my first all Joe night tonight. I don't have Nick with me. I don't have Taylor. I don't have Bobby.
Oh, congratulations.
I don't have Matt.
Need the callers to carry you through tonight.
I'm asking for some feedback from my boys that listen in and my ladies that listen in because it's on me tonight. And tonight, there's not much to talk about possession by possession in this game. This game was decided in the second quarter, and it never got better.
Toronto is much scarier than I anticipated. The pickup of Gasol. I mean, we played awesome in the first quarter. We played almost a perfect quarter, and we were up by two going into the second. So it had disaster written all over it. And I think our margin, I hate to say this, Joe, but it's a lot thinner than we all thought it was. And, oh, man, a few guys got punked tonight. I saw the Raptors staring down Brown, and I don't remember who it was in the first quarter. Maybe Tatum dumped right on
them.
They looked like
Tatum.
The tougher team tonight. Celtics just, I mean, I'm sure you mentioned it in your monologue, but they just had no energy whatsoever. We've all been sitting here trying to figure out, put our fingers on whatever's bothering us game to game. But from the preseason expectations to where we are now and seeing this type of lifeless effort on a national TV game, it just sucks, man. I can't even pinpoint a specific player. It's just so disappointing.
No. It was disappointing.
Man.
Throughout. And to be honest with you, Paul, I'm glad you brought up the "they are a lot scarier than we thought" comment regarding the Raptors, because anybody that listens to me when I co-host with these guys or when I am the host, the one thing I've continuously said all season, and now I got to eat my crow, is that Philly didn't scare me. Toronto didn't scare me. The Pacers didn't scare me. The only team in the East that scared me was the Bucks, and I was wrong. You know, I thought the Celtics had a great game against the Bucks the other night. I thought Brad had a crap play out of the timeout with seconds remaining and I was just talking to Darnell about it prior, about, you know, feeding the ball to Kyrie in the paint with no outlet against a double team of two bigs, a power forward and a center. I mean, come on now. You can't expect anything out of that. So I still think that Milwaukee is the tougher matchup tonight, notwithstanding. Tonight was just a crap night. They're on the road. You know, I don't want to make excuses for them because there are no excuses when you lose 118-98, 90, whatever the crap it was, 118-95. There's no excuses. But at the end of the day, Toronto, to your point, with the addition of Gasol and Kawhi looking like he's coming into his own, scary team in the East. And I think we need to start adjusting expectations going into the postseason, specifically because our own house is dirty with drama and it isn't clean right now. You don't have a team. You have eight individual players playing out there and a couple of tryhards. That's exactly what we got going on in the court right now. It's frightening to watch. It's making me a little nervous on the inside, but I'm going to start peeling apart.
This game was the first time that I adjusted my expectations for the playoffs all season. I have been believing that they're going to flip this proverbial switch once the postseason comes around because they've stayed in all games. But this team that's rocking, they're deep. And seeing how the Celtics almost shut down, just like they did in the Game 7 last year. I know we can't compare a regular season game to, you know, this to Game 7 in the Eastern Conference Finals. But last year we could see their path to the Eastern Conference Finals. Even without the true fans could anyway, even without their best players. But this year, I mean, you really got to go through the rigors to get there. I mean, Philly, Toronto, Milwaukee, you might have to play all three. If we're the four or five, you might have to play all three of them. And that doesn't bode well. I guess, you know, the one thing that I can say is they really miss Aaron Baines a lot. I know that's pathetic to say. He's like our 10th man, but geez, like they're
no.
They have no answer for Gasol.
No, and that's not terrible to say. And I don't consider Baines the 10th man on this team. You, what I consider him is your number 2-5 when you need to spell Al. And when you start playing Al for a ton of minutes and you play him out of position, you start to see that wear down over time. In fact, and if you listen, Paul, you'll hear me a couple of times mention this. I'm not name dropping. I actually work with Patrick Gilroy, who does late night on WEEI in Boston. And, you know, we have our own water cooler talk. And as Celtics fans, as guys that do broadcast podcasts and late night on the radio, we're able to kind of give an educated back and forth. And I'll tell you, both he and I love the contribution that you get from Aaron Baines when he's on the court. You know, Daniel Theis, good player. He's my 10th guy on this team. You know, I put Daniel Theis just above the Yabusele, the Robert Williams, the Brad Wanamakers. You know, he's just above there. But Baines, I've elevated Baines' play because of how he impacts this team as an emotional leader, as a grit guy when he's in there. And you know what? He's a fun guy to watch play, too, because he's not afraid to get in the dirt and start messing it up in the paint. It's what he does, and he does it well. He's also an excellent rebounder. So I like Aaron Baines.
He's an unsung hero, maybe the eighth or ninth man at this point. I wonder, though, if they'll pick somebody up on the buyout market, because I don't know how long Baines is out for, but our place in the standings is looking rockier and rockier. I mean, I don't think we're going to let Brooklyn catch us for the 5 seed. I don't think, but this year, Joe, anything is freaking possible, man, in a bad way.
No,
so,
I'm with you.
I don't think that's going to happen, but I'm almost thinking maybe they should pick up a Robin Lopez or one of these big men just to help to eat up some of those minutes. Because I agree, Theis is a fun energy player at times, but Theis is not – he's going to beat up on third team guys. He's going to do okay against some second team guys, but he's good in 5 minute spurts. When you need a little energy,
oh, absolutely.
You can't count on him to guard a guy like Gasol or even like the Bobons could eat him up in the playoffs or Miles Turner if they play Indiana. There's Theis would get eaten up in any of those matchups. So I wonder, it's kind of late now to integrate any new players. They've had such a hard time integrating their 8 or 9 man core this year. Do you still think that's a possibility to pick somebody up for even 10 games to bridge this gap, man?
I don't know that there's a guy out there that contributes or helps the plight of this team right now. Your issues are far deeper than an injured Aaron Baines, if you ask me. You've got a head case in Kyrie. You got a head case in Rozier. You got a head case in Tatum, a head case in Brown, a head case in Hayward. I mean, it's like literally standing in front of the dike with 11 holes and 10 fingers. And you're wearing shoes. You're not plugging and no matter how many of the holes you plug, it's still leaking water. That's where I think this team is in huge trouble. And, Paul, I want to thank you for the call tonight. I'm going to skip over, go to another guy. Hope you keep listening in.
Thanks, Joe.
You
kind of
chilled, you chilled me out a little bit, but I'm still spitting fire. Thanks, bud.
Nah, keep it up, brother.
857. All right, guys. Well, I'm having technical difficulties here. Looks like I had a call drop. Area code 941. Who do I got listening in?
Well, Joe, I'm going to start my comments.
Oh, snap! Hold on.
Another one.
I'm going to start my comments tonight the same way I started the Chicago Bulls show just a couple of days ago.
Woo! Yeah, it was
so how
not
do we
a
like
good
that
one,
clown
man.
Show? How do we like that,
that
clown
was,
show?
That was tough. It wasn't easy to watch. It wasn't easy. It's not. Put it this way. I spent all of, I think, 5 seconds breaking this down, and I can sum it up for you real easy, Nick. Hot garbage in July in Miami. That's exactly what tonight's game was. Hot garbage. There's nothing.
Well,
there's no positive takeaway from that game. None whatsoever. I love you. No chance you walk me off that ledge tonight.
I'm not walking anybody off the ledge. Me personally, you want a hot take? You want a molten hot lava take? end the Kyrie Irving era in Boston. Let him walk. Terry Rozier wants to be here. Let Terry Rozier be here. This team was the exact same team last season, minus Kyrie Irving, minus Gordon Hayward. I don't think this is Gordon Hayward's fault, although Gordon Hayward is clearly playing stuck in second or third gear. He doesn't have a fourth gear. He doesn't have a fifth gear. He doesn't have overdrive. He is stuck in the mud. They had an alley-oop or a putback or something to him tonight, and he couldn't even slam it down. It was like this weird, ugly layup that he couldn't even put in. I mean, I'm not going to blame Gordon Hayward.
You can. Yeah. No, it's okay to blame him, Nick, because I've done a little bit of homework. Because, you know, as you know, this entire season, I've been the let's measure him week over week, bye week over bye week, small incremental increases. Because I was under the impression that he had a very similar injury to Paul George's when he had his.
Close
so
to
I went back and I started looking up game logs. Do you realize that in Paul George, after a year removed from the injury when Paul George came back, he started averaging 30-plus points a game after he came back? He didn't struggle for an entire year. He didn't still sometime in February, the end of February, still have trouble jumping off that leg because he's afraid of it. This is up in Gordon's head, and he's either got to see a sports psychologist, and if he's seeing one, he's got to see a new one because he's got to find his game. I don't doubt that the ability is there. I doubt that the commitment to success is there. Oh, my gosh. I'm still watching TNT right now, and they're interviewing IT. How's that feel?
It was
right
not
now?
Even worth
not
watching.
Good.
It's not even worth watching. Speaking of which, since you brought up the TNT broadcast, I cannot – I mean, is there anything worse than their players-only broadcasts? I mean, how many times do we have sports shows, sports talk, whether it's on the radio or whether it's on ESPN or Fox Sports or some other sports channel, and you have the players who get cornered on the point that they can't prove, you know, by logic or reason, revert to or resort to, well, you never played the game, so you don't know what you're talking about, to somebody like Skip Bayless, whoever, who's never played the game. Then we turn on the TNT players only, and it's like, well, you've never broadcast a game because how many times do I have to listen to Dennis Scott say, ooh, Mr. Bunny, ooh. I mean, like, come on now. Like there's more to color commentating than making funny noises or talking about the game as if you were playing the game yourself. I understand. All respect to Grant Hill, who was broadcasting tonight. I don't know who it was. It sounded like they were all saying dumb stuff. Isaiah Thomas, Dennis Scott, those are the three that were in-game commentary. Would have rather listened to Candace Parker. I like Candace Parker. You know, I'd rather they just showed Candace Parker for a full 3 hours on the screen instead of watching the Boston Celtics tonight. But, I mean, it was just horrible game, horrible play, horrible commentating from a horrible commentating crew, and I'm laying the blame on this team squarely at Kyrie Irving. Somebody during the on the commentary said, somebody on this commentary said, I mean, well, 7 points in 28 minutes. What is that? He played like trash, and I know that he was taken out of the game early because it was garbage time, but come on now, Kyrie Irving. Listen, Kyrie Irving, from the minute he's got there, has shown that he does not want to be the leader of a young team. He wants to go and goof around and circle jerk with his buddy Kevin Durant down in New York.
So,
he doesn't want to lead
Nick,
a team. He wants to be super sidekick. He wants to be super Robin to Batman. He wants to play with Anthony Davis or Kevin Durant or other all-world players like LeBron James. He doesn't want to do – where was he? Which series was it last season? And I know I'm getting going. I'm spitting fire. Which series was it last season in the playoffs? Was it the Bucks, because there was only two series that went to Game 7? Was it the Bucks or the Cavs that Kyrie Irving couldn't get off his ass and go to the Game 7 because, he had some type of surgery that he had to get? Like, he couldn't reschedule his surgery. I mean, come on now. Wasn't it an emergency surgery that couldn't have waited a day after the Game 7? He wasn't there. He sold out his teammates I don't know how many times this season. How many times I'm going to mention the incident on the court in Madison Square Garden waiting 10 minutes for his dad to come get his jersey. And then he's out there at All-Star Weekend. And I know he hates the way the media portrays things and the media does go after certain things, but he's out there making it known. It's almost like a dude that, you know, finally is dating his first attractive woman, and he wants everybody to see him out and about with that attractive woman. That was Kyrie and Kevin Durant during All-Star Weekend. And then I see Celtics fans saying, ooh, Kevin Durant might be coming to Boston. Are you freaking nuts? Are you crazy? There's no room for that. There's no no cap room. Kevin Durant is not coming to Boston. There's not going to be some weird sign-and-trade where we unload Gordon Hayward's obnoxious, obscene $30-plus million-a-year contract on the Golden State Warriors in exchange for Kevin Durant. It's not happening. If they're getting buddy-buddy and somebody's getting, you know, a little bit, you know, tight in the pants over Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving being buddy-buddy All-Star Weekend, they better be Knicks fans.
They're Knicks
because
fans.
That's where he's going.
Yeah.
They're not coming to Boston. So, as far as I'm concerned, Kyrie Irving has shirked every opportunity to be a leader for this team. And this last instance, this last comment after the Bulls game, no one can beat us in a seven-game series when we have a chance to do whatever, which is a fine comment. But then when they asked him, well, how do you have such confidence? Because I'm here. Kyrie.
Right.
I mean, Kyrie, that's not how you do it, Kyrie.
So I'm guessing that, and I'm looking at the call screen, you jumped in after I unloaded on Kyrie tonight. So one thing I want to give you is a huge prop because great minds think alike. I'm starting to pick apart this team player by player, and I started tonight with the one you have to go to, and that's Kyrie Irving. And I started by saying the good things about him, Nick, because there are good. You know,
he's fun to watch.
I don't want it to get lost in translation, but Kyrie, you know, somewhere Taylor McLeod is very happy to hear me say this, is a generational transcendent player. His abilities on the court and a multitude of accomplishments off the court typically put him in godlike status to his fans. You know, the things he can do with the ball are unquestionably remarkable. His vision on the court to find an open player is absolutely legendary, and his uncanny angle shots will be in textbooks on basketball someday. That's the good stuff. Now, the bad stuff, and where I agree with you, is I believe Kyrie struggles. They lie in his inability to have what I call the Brady effect. Maybe being a sports fan in New England, I'm a little spoiled to inappropriately compare players from different sports, but what is undeniable is the fact that Tom Brady, whether you're a Patriots fan or a Patriots hater, and I don't really care where you fall, but he makes the players around him better. David Ortiz, when he played for the Boston Red Sox, he made hitters in the batting order above him and below him. If he was hitting in the four hole, the three hole, and the five hole hitters, he made better. Larry freaking Bird made the players on the court around him better. And the line of Boston greats who have played here and done just that goes on. But Kyrie doesn't have that in his bag of tricks, and it shows. He would be awesome on a Golden State. He would be awesome on a team where there's, you know, if he joined the Lakers, he'd be awesome again because he'd have Bron again. Where he could be around players of similar stature to your point and blend in. That missing piece in his game is a tough one for us as fans of this team to comment on. And it's also a difficult one to call out. But that doesn't make it not true. You can have all the talent in the world. But if you can't figure out a way to get the players around you who aren't on your level of play to play like they are or to find a way to work with them and get them beyond where they are as players, then you aren't winning championships as the focal piece of a team in the NBA. You know who you can go and ask? James freaking Harden. Awesome player. He's not winning any championships in Houston. Not as currently constituted, he's not. And not, sadly, being in the West with the Warriors right now. But he's not going to win any championships. Bron isn't going to take the Lakers to the NBA Finals and get through Golden State. You
not
need
even go to the playoffs.
Other pieces. Right. You need other pieces around you. And what I think Kyrie fails to understand is what he has in a young Jaylen Brown, what he has in a young Jason Tatum, is moldable freaking clay. If he had that in his bag of tricks, if he had the ability to be a player coach, to understand that his level of intellect, his level of court awareness, his level of play is something that can actually be taught. It can be transcended down onto the other players of your team and do it effectively, this team would be unworldly. The problem is he's a jag, just another guy with incredible talent but an inability help those around him be better. That is the fatal flaw in the 2018-2019 Boston Celtics, in my humble opinion.
Well, not even just that, Joe. It's also the fact that it's not that he's just not making the players around him better. It's the fact that he has that his you know, mercurial, you know, kind of weird, kind of, you know, like trying to fit mysterious or, you know, I would call it pseudo-mysterious because I don't really think he's that mysterious. But, you know, this kind of aura that he tries to put around himself with his, you know, namaste tattoos and all that other stuff, he thinks that he just really feels himself. That's the word we use. He feels himself. He's getting high off his own supply. He's getting fumes off his own, you know, he's smelling his own fumes because he thinks he's so fantastic that he can't be bothered to take any of these players out there. And not only is he not making them better, but at every opportunity, at every chance where he's had the opportunity, with the exception of that one brief lie right before the season began where he said, if you guys will have me, I'd love to stay here and have my number retired. You don't lie about stuff like that, first of all, Kyrie. This isn't New York. This isn't Cleveland. This is Boston. But on top of that, the things that he says just during All-Star Weekend, he just sold out. I mean, it's like there isn't, and I said this on the show after the Bulls game, there hasn't been – he may complain about the questions. He doesn't like the questions. I'm tired of the questions. We went through that whole thing where he was, you know, talking about, I don't know anybody's shit, and then we had to sit there and dissect what he meant. Was he really just annoyed with the questions? Is he, you know, does he not want to be here? What exactly is it? But he may not like the questions, but – he answers them all. It's not like somebody puts a microphone in his face and he doesn't have the sense to pull a Marshawn Lynch and say, I'm just here so I don't get fined. Or, you know, yeah, that's right. A great question, but, you know, whatever. And they just give a standard boilerplate answer. He always has to go into some crazy random depth that makes no sense. Why is he going into depth with Rachel Nichols in his sit-down with Rachel Nichols and talking about, you know, conflict or hard feelings about Terry Rozier, basically saying, you know, why is Terry Rozier, you know, upset about? I'm Kyrie Irving, you know, like what is he mad about minutes for? Does he know he's playing behind Kyrie? That's something that we as fans or analysts may say, but that's not something that Kyrie Irving should be saying, especially not in front of the media. I'm not going to go rehash every single instance, but I'm not going to rehash every single instance of Kyrie Irving having an opportunity, not just on the court, but off the court, to be a leader and completely failing at it every single time. But that's basically what it is. So it's not just Kyrie Irving's inability to make the players around him better, to take these young players that are just waiting to be molded. It seemed like when he first joined the team last season, these guys all wanted to pick up some of his dribbling techniques. You saw Terry Rozier looking almost like a baby Irving out there, and I was like, Terry Rozier don't want to be anything like Kyrie Irving out there. He couldn't take those young players and make them better. But not only that, the shit, pardon my French, but the crap that he's out there talking in the media, the things that he's doing off the court, the way that he behaves sometimes on the court is detrimental to this team, not just in making the players around him better, but it has fractured. It's fractured what the young guys developed last season when they came within 5 minutes of the NBA Finals. And before I get to one last point, Joe, because there is one thing I want to point out about the Toronto Raptors, just the X factor that I think really makes the Toronto Raptors more dangerous, is I want to play a little clip. I want to play a little clip from my man Kyrie Irving, some classic words from Tupac Shakur.
You gotta take them out anytime you feel like it. You gotta get the ground beneath your feet, partner. Get the wind behind your back and go out in the blaze if you got to. Otherwise, you ain't shit. You might as well be dead your damn self.
Trying to tell me I ain't shit?
I ain't trying to tell you shit. I tell your mama you ain't shit.
That's what I think about Kyrie Irving right now. Not that strong, not a personal thing, but in terms of a basketball perspective, that's how I have one nerve, Joe, and he's already got on that nerve. He's been on that nerve, and I'm just done with it. I mean, if we have to sit here and we're talking about trading guys like Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown and Marcus Smart, trading all of these guys to bring in Anthony Davis for one season just to make Kyrie Irving happy, that's not Boston Celtics basketball. That's not what this team is about. It's not about throwing everything away just to make one guy who's been, for the most part, non-committal and has been, for the most part, pretty selfish in his time in Green just to make him happy. I say keep Jason Tatum. I say keep Jaylen Brown. Get rid of the locker room cancer, who I have no inside knowledge, but my flaming hot take right right now, that locker room cancer is probably Kyrie Irving. And get rid of Kyrie Irving and then build from there. If you have to do a little minor rebuild, do everything you can. Lock up Terry Rozier, $15 million a year, $13 million a year, whatever, for the next 4 years.
All right.
Don't worry about Jalen Brown bringing him back. Tell Jason Tatum, this is your team, and build around the young guys because they had some fantastic chemistry. And Brad Stevens had fantastic control that he could execute almost anything last season. And the only reason they did not win last season was because LeBron James is a superstar and got those superstar calls. And that's where that type of thing counts in Game 7. Before I let you get to the next caller, just one last thing. The X factor for the Toronto Raptors is the emergence of Pascal Siakam. He went from 7 points last season in 20 minutes per game to 16 points, 7 rebounds in almost 32 minutes a game this season. Nobody was talking about, people were talking about Siakam, but his development this season, we as Celtics fans didn't predict Siakam being what he has become this year. We didn't predict that in the offseason. We didn't predict that looking ahead to the Toronto Raptors. Yeah, Siakam is a nice, bench player. The fact that they were able to get Marcus Gasol without giving up anything, really. And then you add Marcus Gasol on top of that while the Boston Celtics just sat there and basically twiddled their you-know-whats and did nothing. Danny Ainge is going to look back and say, what did I do? Why did I do that? And that's all I have to say about Forrest Gump says, and that's about all I have to say about that, Jenny. Because I have no more emotions to give to this team, especially when I see Kyrie Irving out there, too cool to care. Too cool to care about his teammates, too cool to care about the game, too cool to care about anything except for where he's going to suit up next year and play with his friends. I love the Boston Celtics. I love the franchise. And I don't even want to drag Brad Stevens because we could say, Brad Stevens should be better or could be better. Maybe Brad Stevens isn't the guy to manage superstar egos. But where's the responsibility for Kyrie Irving to manage his own ego and to prove what the whole point that he left Cleveland for was that he could lead a team? He's failing miserably at that. And I'm sorry, but if he goes somewhere else, if he goes to New York to play with Kevin Durant where they won't win anything because that team has nothing on it except for Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving, if that's where it goes, if he goes down there, he's still not proving that he can do it by himself because all he's proving is, he can do it with arguably the best player in the league right now, another MVP-caliber player. He's not leading anything, and that's the biggest disappointment that I think. And when you look at the Boston Celtics, and that's the last thing I'm going to say, and I said this on the last show. I know I said this is the last thing I'm going to say. But you watch the Boston Celtics, and there's a thing called Boston Celtics basketball. And when I watch this team this year, the Kyrie Irving Boston Celtics, I don't see Boston Celtics basketball. I see me basketball. I see lazy basketball. I see, Kyrie Irving's going to save us in the fourth quarter after we're down by 25 points basketball. It's not the same thing. I don't hold it against Danny Ainge for making that trade with Isaiah Thomas because Isaiah Thomas was quote-unquote damaged goods. I hate that term. But Isaiah Thomas was injured, and it would have slowed up the entire process. But, hey, maybe I don't even want to say that. I was going to say something about karma and other injuries, but I'm not going to do that because it's not like that. It's not that serious.
Nope.
That team with Isaiah Thomas showed grit, it showed balls, it showed heart. And I haven't seen heart from Kyrie Irving this season yet. I haven't seen heart from Kyrie Irving in a green jersey yet, at least not when it matters. At least not when it matters, Joe. So I'm not talking anybody down from the ledge.
Nick
That's all I have to say.
Ladies and gentlemen, the great Nick Cecento with his hot takes coming up to us from the Sunshine State of Florida. Nick, always a pleasure to have you on the line. I hope you continue to listen for the back half of the last 10 minutes. I'm going to do the recorded read for Boston Barber and Tattoo and come back with, sadly, and I know it's going to piss you off, my man, I'm dragging Tatum. Stay with us, folks.
This is Boston Barber and Tattoo Company, the one and only barber and tattoo shop located on 113 Salem Street in Boston's historic North End.
Hey, Nick, you there?
With our heart, dedication, respect, and grit, we provide the very best haircuts and tattoos at absolutely unbeatable prices. These are the core principles upon which owner Robert Delarusso founded Boston Barber and Tattoo Company in 2007. 10 years later, business is booming.
Robert's tireless work ethic and trailblazing spirit has launched this rocket ship of a company to the moon.
So there you go, folks. Boston Barber and Tattoo Company, located in the North End, 113 Salem Street. Go get your lettuce chop, get some ink, get a sleeve. Tell them that CLNS Media sent you, and they'll be happy to know that you listen to the Celtics Postgame Live podcast broadcast. I'm your host tonight, Joe Choquette. We are winding down. We had a fiery conversation over the last best part of about an hour with CLNS Media host Nick Sesento calling in. We had Darnell. We had Paul. It's been a tough night to comment on the Boston Celtics. I refuse to comment about this game in regards to possession by possession or style of play. If you watch the game or if you plan on watching it, watch the first quarter. It was a nice, even strength game. Everybody was shooting pretty much lights out. I think the Celtics ended up down two or up two at the end of one and then literally mailed it in for the rest of the game. Your final tonight, Boston Celtics 95, Toronto Raptors in Toronto 118. I have destroyed Kyrie Irving tonight. I have destroyed the Boston Celtics' current incarnation and problems and drama and crap. But one of the players I have left alone and kind of got sidetracked because I wanted to get through the whole five, starting five. But I don't want to miss talking about this because let me just start by saying it is no secret. If you've listened to CLNS Media's Celtics postgame live broadcast this season where I've been a co-host, you know that I am not a huge Jason Tatum fan. I'm just not. I don't particularly enjoy his game. I don't particularly like his game. I am a diehard Celtics fan from way back in the day, like 81, 82. So because of that, him playing with Kobe in the winter, I mean, in the summer before training camp, that didn't sit well with me. Kobe was not a type of player that I wanted Jason Tatum to emulate. I think it's all time we call Jason Tatum what he really is. And it's not the next Kobe, but it's more like a second-year player who didn't make that jump in play to elevate his game that we anticipated he would after last year. Is he a nice player to have? Sure is. Is he a future piece to someone's big three, whether it's here in Boston or whether he's part of a trade package or walks at the end of his contract? Not unless he figures out a bunch of his game. That's the honest-to-God truth. People that have listened to the broadcast podcast that I've done this season know that I've had and been hard on Jason Tatum from the jump. I think he's careless with the ball on penetration, seems almost out of the play when Kyrie's on the floor, like interested in watching what Kyrie does, but not interested in being an integral part of the offense at that point. It bothers me. It really does. He needs to work on his dribble control and be more aggressive overall, both sides of the ball, on defense and on offense, and not a possession here and there, but stringing together game after game. It's frustrating to watch. Now, don't get me wrong. I don't think Tatum has hit his ceiling yet. I just think he hasn't made that leap we all thought he could and could use a little more fullness to his game, meaning he needs to either dish the ball off and get the assist with a little more frequency or make the change to being an aggressive and not settling for the outside shot so much and committing to hit the lane and hit it hard. He's becoming very, very predictable. And it's not slowing down his shot attempts. He's averaging, you know, his shot attempts haven't really changed all season. Quality of his shots have changed. The ability to maintain possession when entering the lane, that is a piece of his game that if he doesn't work on, mark my words, it's going to be a huge hindrance to his NBA career. He's way too careless, way too careless. And then that's all I'll say about him. But then we're going to talk about Al. And I don't really have much bad stuff to say about Al. He is who he is, people. We've dissected his game for years now. And when needed this season to step up and be a scorer for this team, he's demonstrated he can still do it.
I think I was talking to Darnell about it earlier. When it comes to playing the high pick and roll two man game with Kyrie, he likes to play with Kyrie. That's a good team on the court. The only problem is it only constitutes 2 out of 5 players on the court. He's shown that there are very few bigs that can stay with him in regards to the complete game, offensively, defensively, boxing out, the occasional three. His defense and ability to close a lane down is pretty solid, and it has been his entire career. I'm not dropping any hot takes on Al Horford tonight. Al Horford is a perennial all-star. Al Horford is an aging all-star. But Al Horford is a part of this Boston Celtics fabric. He is who he is. I would never utter the words average Al. But what he does so effortlessly that others in the media that have coined that phrase neglect to understand his full game. He isn't the problem on this team. He isn't causing the drama, and he isn't getting the way of progress. He's what he's always been, a solid big with a skill set that doesn't easily translate to points. But to think of this team without him is a scary proposition. It just really is. I could continue on and on and on. We could talk about Jaylen Brown. We could talk about Gordon Hayward. I think we kind of touched on Gordon a little bit earlier. I really think that if he's not seeing a sports psychologist, he needs to. And if he is seeing one, he needs a new one, because he's not making the progress that he should have made by now. And I don't know. I don't believe it's physical anymore. I think it's all upstairs. Jaylen Brown, extremely heady player. I think he just needs more opportunities, to be honest with you. I kind of look at giving the opportunities you give to Tatum, to Brown, and watch this kid flourish. And I don't know if that falls in Brad Stevens' lap for mismanaging the plays, mismanaging the talent. I'm not 100% sure yet. But as this season has progressed, I've seen some trends. The trends are real simple. You're probably noticing names I haven't mentioned: Marcus Morris, Marcus Smart. Why haven't I mentioned them? Because they've been consistent for the most part, almost all season. Morris had that hiccup when he had the neck injury. He seems to be rounding close to back to form. I don't think he's ever going to touch where he was skyrocketing before the injury, but that wasn't the real Marcus Morris Sr. that we were seeing in the early part of the season. That was a guy reaching a career level. He's still having a solid season. Marcus Smart is still, to quote the great Nick Cicento, he's gritting balls. Both sides of the ball, up and down the court. If you have to pick apart Marcus Smart's game, he falls in love with the three when he sinks the first one. Other than that, you really don't have much you can complain about. When you start thinking about this team as a whole, it's got a long road to hoe. And unfortunately, they're running out of pavement, people. The season is coming to a close. There is not a lot of time to bang yourself up in the standings. Forget the 1 seed. Pretty much forget the 2 seed and 3. You're battling at best to hope you get on a run and capture the 4 seed. These are the things that the Boston Celtics have to keep in mind. On the broadcast tonight, they were talking about needing practice. Are you kidding me? We just had the All-Star break. Prior to that, you had a nice little dip in play. And following the All-Star break, you had a nice dip in play before the games kicked in again. This team needs to have an Ubuntu moment. And I scaredly say, I think they've gone too far down the rabbit hole to climb out. I want to thank you all for listening tonight. I am Joe Choquette. This is CLNS Media's Celtics Post Game Live. Make sure that if you didn't catch this live, or if you are catching it live, want to hear it again, it will be available on iTunes and every media streaming starting tomorrow. Again, thank you. Take care. I don't know when I'm on again, but next time, I promise, I'll be spitting fire as always. Take care, peeps. See ya.
Another one.